how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you need to summarize your class notes or want to create a recipe with the ingredients you already have in your fridge, Meta AI has the answers. You can also research topics, explore interests, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miroboard. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miroboard?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to On Texas Football, the Longhorn live stream presented by My Perfect Franchise. I'm your host, Blake Monroe. A rare appearance for me in the evenings, where tonight I'm joined by CJ Vogel and Rod Favors. And guys, we got a lot to talk about. Get your questions in. We'll get to some of those here in just a little bit. But first, guys, I want to talk about win totals. And they talked about it a little bit this morning on Coffee and Football, I know, but I want to dive back into that. Action Network put out the SEC win totals for this upcoming season. The Longhorns with 10.5 projected wins for the over-under. Georgia also with 10.5. And then the next closest is LSU, Missouri, Ole Miss, Alabama, et cetera, at 9.5. But I want to get y'all's thoughts on Texas, and then we'll tackle some of these other teams.
Texas at 10.5 wins. I think they had five teams that had at least 10.5 wins. And Texas, one of those five teams. What I think stands out mostly, and I think CJ will agree, is that you're looking at Texas' opponents that they have to play in that SEC schedule. And a lot of the opponents they have to play, at least based on these projected win totals, are at the bottom of those SEC projected win totals, right? You got to play Vanderbilt and Florida and Kentucky, Arkansas, Mississippi State. I mean, most of half the teams they're going to play in the SEC are projected to be some of the worst teams in the SEC. Now, they won't all be right. One of those teams will surprise. I don't know which one it's going to be, but, you know, one of those teams at the back end right here of this SEC projected win total is probably going to win 2-3 more games, you know, than they expect them to win. But for the most part, it just makes you feel good about how favorable the schedule is, CJ, for Texas, considering a lot of the SEC opponents. Now, you've got to play the big dog. You've got to play Georgia, the big dog, of course. But the rest of that SEC schedule is pretty much considered to be the bottom of the SEC schedule.
Yeah, those were the 2 points I was going to take away from is, one, Texas tied with Georgia top of the projected win totals tells you that Vegas respects Texas and the way that they've rebounded after having 11 departures for the NFL draft. That's not an easy thing to do. And so to have a 10.5, kind of line in which your win total is set at right now, that's Vegas tipping the cap of respect to Steve Sarkisian, the additions they've had this offseason, and of course, Quinn Ewers. But to your point, Rod, is, hey, you get to look at the back half of your schedule saying, yeah, we get to play Kentucky, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Florida. I mean, that right there, I think you look at it and say, yeah, it's a pretty favorable initial year in the SEC. And of course, I mean, we're looking at it right now. Curtis Ozer, I like your comment, actually. 10-2 should be the floor. And, you know, if that's the floor, you lose the win total. But, hey, I think 10-2 at the end of the day should get you into the college football playoff at 12 teams. If you're higher than that, 11 wins, hello, top four seed. I think it's a really, really good look for the Longhorns at the moment.
And let's think about the road games, guys, right, for Texas in the SEC. You got to go to Arkansas. You got to go to Vanderbilt. You got to go to A&M. But Arkansas and Vanderbilt, guys, they are, the since 2019, the worst and the second worst home records in the SEC. So those are the two of your road teams. A&M, now A&M's a different monster altogether, as we know. So I'm not putting A&M in that boat. A&M expected to, you know, be a team that wins 8-plus games. And home field there, I played at Aggieland. Trust me, that is a hostile environment. It'll probably be as hostile as it's ever been in the history of that 100-plus year rivalry. And the Aggies win about, since 2019, 78% of their home games. They'll be ready for that one. But the other two road games you play in the SEC, you know, Vanderbilt and Arkansas, even though, yes, you went to Arkansas, and it will be a hostile environment too, but they haven't won a lot of games at home. They're not necessarily a dominant home team. And that's, even though the environment may be hostile, they are not necessarily formidable at home.
Rod, let me ask you this. I know CJ had to step away for just a second here, so we'll be welcoming him back here in just a moment. But any surprises on there? Anything that, you know, just really catches your eye for good or bad?
Well, just overall, I think a lot of respect for what Eli Drinkwitz is doing over at Missouri. You can see that. I mean, a lot of people think he's a damn good football coach, and I see that reflecting the lines here. Ole Miss, I mean, a lot of people are high on Ole Miss because that transfer portal class they've had might be the best transfer portal class in the country. So I could see Ole Miss, you know, being a team that some people expect to make a run here. That'll be interesting the way they sit. And, you know, I'll say it, I saw DraftKings had the Aggies favorite in that Notre Dame game.
Yes. By two, I believe. Two,
yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, and they're – honestly, they're favored. If you go look at – I thought DraftKings had seven games that they listed, and they were favored in six of the seven. The only one of those seven they weren't favored in was the one against Texas. And I was – if you look at the DraftKings, at least the early win totals, over-unders that they have for the Aggies – at least they have them favored in that Notre Dame game, which means they win that Notre Dame game and they win the rest of those games that they, you know, obviously are projected to win. You talk about the Aggies, yeah, reaching that 8 win total. I don't think Longhorn fans have really entertained the possibility of the Aggies being good when they play them. you know, just and for Longhorn, they just really haven't thought about that. A lot of the stuff they're thinking about playing Michigan. Think about playing Georgia. You know, Texas got their eyes and their expectations right now on bigger prizes, and I totally get that, and they should. But, you know, there's a sneaky chance Aggies might be pretty good. Now, what does good mean? I don't know. Like 8-9 wins? That's good. The truth is Texas and Texas A&M, you know, they've only had double-digit win seasons in the same season only once in, like, the 100-plus year history of the rivalry. So there is a belief, almost paranoia, in each fan base that for one of those programs to be good, it must be at the expense of the other. And maybe that is true. Who knows? But that could be tested this year because, like I said, the Aggies, 8.5 wins. That's not bad. If they overachieve, they could be up at 9, and that's going to be the game circled for them. I guarantee it's the biggest game of the season for them. Texas got a lot of big games like that. Texas will have the Michigan game circled, Georgia game circled, and the Oklahoma game circled. That stretch right there, because don't they play Georgia? It's Georgia, then Oklahoma, right? That Texas schedule?
Yes, I believe you're right.
Yeah, like that little stretch. No, sorry, it's Oklahoma, then Georgia. I knew they were right there together. It's Oklahoma, then Georgia. That little stretch right there. Texas doesn't have a tough stretch. They just have, you know, kind of tough marquee games. That is probably the toughest stretch you could get potentially with Texas. Oklahoma, then Georgia, depending on how good Oklahoma is. But, yeah, I think Oklahoma might be a little underrated right now. I think they could overachieve potentially. I think they're projected at 7.5 wins. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think Oklahoma could go over there. I got a little more faith in Brent Venables than a lot of Longhorn fans do. I think he might be, you know, worthy of winning more than that. They lost a lot, lost the entire line, lost the quarterback, replaced the coordinators. This will be a real test for him going into the SEC.
For sure. What do you think about Vanderbilt? 2.5 wins. You think they go over that?
Wow. I'm just glad they're on the schedule. And by the way, you're going to need it. You got Vanderbilt right after you play Georgia. You play Oklahoma, then Georgia, and then you got Vandy on the road. That's great. That's perfect. It's exactly what you need. It's exactly what you need Vanderbilt right there if you're the Longhorns. So I'm not saying they're going to be, you know, an easy win or a pushover, but of all the road trips you could have after you play Georgia and after playing Oklahoma, that would be probably the friendliest of the road trips you could have. Matter of fact, it is based on the numbers. They got the 8-23 is their home record, I believe, since 2019. Texas should be able to go in there and be, essentially put that game away early so a lot of guys can play. You should be playing 65, 70 guys in that game on the road. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, the other thing that we said we were going to talk about, Rod, is head coach ranking. CBS Sports came out with a list. They've been doing it, in blocks of 25, I believe, over the last few days. But today was 1 through 25. Stark comes in at number 5 on that list. The 4 in front of him, Kirby Smart, number 1, Ryan Day, number 2, Dabo, number 3, and then Brian Kelly, number 4. But what do you think about – let's start with what do you think about Sark's number 5 ranking there?
I think Sark is definitely a top 10 guy right now. There's no question about that. I think top 5, you can make that argument. I think this year he can secure himself a top 5 spot. I think this is the year to do it for Sark. You know, you got back-to-back, playoff runs, of course, the 12-team playoffs as opposed to the 14 playoff. But back-to-back years in the playoffs, another good draft we're expecting too, if that is the case. Some shows the development that Sark has been able to implement here at the University of Texas, something that was sorely lacking over the years. So he's done a great job of that. His scheme has evolved, done a great job of evolving the scheme. I think this year it'll evolve even more. You can make the argument that, you want to make the argument that Kalen DeBoer should be ranked ahead of him. I wouldn't disagree with that. Kalen DeBoer's beaten Sark twice, and Kalen DeBoer has a better record overall than Sark. But I think what people are seeing in Sark now is the same thing that Longhorn fans have come to appreciate. That was a time in Sark's, career where he was considered a prodigy. I mean, this guy could have been one of the youngest head coaches in the NFL if he had taken Al Davis's offer to be a young head coach. He didn't think he was ready at the time. And now you're starting to see all the things that made Sark a prodigy, the offensive acumen, the ability to build a program, from the ground up, to be able to implement a positive culture, to be able to recruit. I mean, he has his hands in everything. And I think that shows that, he's learned from his mistakes, whether it be mistakes on the field or off the field. This is a guy that evolves. And that's why, I was originally not a huge Sark fan. I'm now a Sark convert. I've been won over by Sark in the last 2-3 years, just watching him as a coach and watching him evolve and progress. And he's still not the best coach in college football. So he's still got some room to grow. But the growth that we've seen from Sark just the time that he's been here shows that he's definitely got the upside to be a national championship coach. I'm not sure Longhorn fans thought that was the case when he got here. Sark has proven that, earned the trust of a lot of Longhorn fans. So I would say definitely in the top 10, top 5 right now. Like I said, you could make the argument if you wanted to that, like I said, Kalen DeBoer is a better coach if you wanted to. I think, honestly, a little bit of the shine is off of Lincoln Riley. And Lincoln Riley is amazing offensively. But, hey, man, football consists of 3 different phases, and he doesn't seem to give a damn about the defensive side of the football. And you would think that it goes back to what we said about Sark, right? Sark learns from his mistakes. Lincoln Riley, I think he's a hell of a coach and one of the great quarterback nurturers and quarterback developers in football at any level. But it's like, dude, did you not learn your lesson at Oklahoma? You have to devote more resources and more of your attention to defense. You have to figure that out. And he doesn't seem to learn the lessons. He seems to be pretty stuck in his ways. Sark ain't stuck in his ways. Sark evolves, man. I expect to see another leap from him in evolution of his game. He's talked about, you listen to him talk lately, he's talking about versatility in building his roster. He wants versatility in skill sets. So he wants guys that have, skill sets that make them flexible, where you can move them around the chessboard, where you're talking about the offensive line, where you're talking about defense, where you're talking about DBs, or where you're talking about wide receivers. But he also talks about versatility of the scheme. And he wants his scheme now to be versatile. And I think that's what we may see the leap this year. We've seen him use more of the pony package. We've seen the Big 12, Big 11 packages. He's been on the 40 acres. Really found the way to maximize positions that have a ton of depth and a ton of talent there. Talented depth, O-line, running back. I think he's going to do it at wide receiver this year. I think you're going to see that 10 personnel package, that red package he had at Alabama, where he had those four first-round wide receivers. Now, you don't have four first-round wide receivers here, but you got a really deep room, one of the deepest in the country. I think you're going to see him break out a 10 personnel package to continue to kind of grow and expand his repertoire as an offensive mind, because he has the luxury to do that at Texas. There's so much talent. Why not make opposing defensive coordinators like hell, having to prepare for all those different personnel groupings, all the versatility that he could offer. So I think you're going to see even more of it with Sark. And like I said, originally I wasn't a huge Sark guy. Now you probably won't find a bigger Sark fan, and I've been converted. So I can add, because that's like, you know, I used to initially kind of criticize, you know, the downside of Sark and some of his failings and shortcomings as a coach. Now I have fewer of those to criticize, and I've been converted over to being a Sark guy all the way. I remember when Sark had his first game calling plays, and I made the decision. I said, if Sark comes out and runs 21 personnel, two back sets in that game, I was like, you know what? He'll win me over, because he'll see that he's been watching film and looking at the same stuff that he's been looking at, because I've been preaching that for like 2 years, even with Tom Herman in his latter years there in Texas. And the dude came out on the first drive that he called plays at the University of Texas, came out in 21 personnel. I was like, man, this dude must be speaking to me. I don't know what's going on. He's talking to me. Ever since that point, I was like, man, I'm a Sark guy. This guy, I like the way he sees the football world. I like his interpretation and translation of football. And he's a Shanahan. One of my best friends in the world is Shano. And he's a big Shano fan. Loves him some Shanahan. Makes Shanahan coaching tree. So, I don't know. I've learned that Sark sees the football world kind of like I do. I haven't talked to him personally about that. I've talked to you guys about that. And that's why a lot of my kind of predictions about the offense and stuff, I think they come true just because I have a similar take on a lot of things football-wise. And I learned a lot of my football from somebody that he considers one of his, you know, mentors, which is Kyle Shanahan. Older, you know, Kyle Shanahan's younger than him. He's older, but he considers him a mentor in the game. And I learned a lot of what I know about football theory from the Shanahan clan.
Yeah, for sure. Well, man, that list is actually generating some good questions and comments. We'll get to those here in a second. But first, Rod, I need to tell everybody out there about Annie Ludeke and My Perfect Franchise. And guys, are you looking to diversify? You may be somebody like me that has their hands in multiple businesses. And I can tell you firsthand that Andy can help you diversify by finding you a business that will fit your time allotment and your financial goals. Can't talk tonight. Call him or email him to learn more. He's got a really cool process. I did it myself, and I promise that you can do it too. That's Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net, or check him out at MyPerfectFranchise.net as well for more information. And like I said, Rod, that list is lots of good comments here from folks. First, I need to get to this super chat from UT Boy. I don't want to forget it. He says, we're talking back. Happy to be back here on Texas Football for sure. It's been a while. So excited to be here with Rod and CJ tonight.
Thank you, D-Boy. Thank you, man.
Thank you. But Leon, and he's not the only one. Leon says, how does Ryan Day get rated over Dabo? I'm no Dabo fan, but his resume is much better. Mamba says, what has Ryan Day done besides choke? People don't agree with Ryan Day being up that high on that list. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, he's losing credibility because of, you know, his record against Michigan. That's part of it, right? Losing some credibility there. And he hasn't been able to put Ohio State over the hump. This is a huge year for Ryan Day. This is, guys, they've souped up everything, right? They've added, you know, high-level coordinators in the recent years. Now they've added, you know, Chip Kelly calling the plays. And I don't know if it's unprecedented, but something we just don't see. You don't see a guy leave a head coach, Power 5 head coaching job, and decide, yeah, I want to be a coordinator over here at this Power 5 job. You just don't see it. So that's a hell of an upgrade. You can make the argument they got the best OC, DC, coordinator duo in all of college football. Ryan Day giving up, you know, the play calling because he figures something's got to change. I respect him for that, right? What's the definition of insanity? Same thing over and over again, expecting different results. Don't do that. Just, you know, flip the script, change it up. And he's changing it up. The roster is loaded. Nobody in the country has more talent than Ohio State, arguably. So they're loaded. There's no more excuses for Ryan Day. So, yeah, big year. I agree. I don't necessarily trust a Will Howard. We don't know if we're going to get Will the Thrill Howard or Will Spill the Peel Howard. So I wonder about that. But I figured, hey, they've been stockpiling talent. They definitely got some answers at quarterback if a veteran Will Howard can't do it. But I assume Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, can bring out the best in Will Howard. And he can be the best version of himself too. So I don't know why Ryan Day is that high. He's lost a lot of street cred over the last couple of years with the way he's lost footing and lost ground in that Michigan rivalry.
Yeah.
Dabo should be ranked ahead of him. I agree with that. Dabo's
one title. They'll probably be turning the heat up if that Michigan trend continues on there.
Especially this year after they lost everything. You lose to him this year. Honestly, Ryan Day might – I ain't going to lie. It's crazy to think with his record, he might not make it. He might be on the hot seat. He might not make it the next couple of years if he keep losing to him.
Well, hey, two other names on that list, and we got to go back a little bit to when they released it yesterday. But they got A&M's Mike Elko at 32, and then Brent Venables at 34 with Oklahoma. Your thoughts on those two being in the upper 30s or lower 30s?
I mean, that's fair for Elko, right? I mean, Elko he hasn't done much. So I think for Brent Venables, I would have thought last year would have got him a little bit more a push, would have got him some more votes. But that's all right. I mean, honestly, this is the truth, guys. And Longhorn fans, you can accept this because you know Longhorns, they achieved last year, got to the college football playoff, and that was a damn good team, one of the best teams in the history of Texas football. But Texas got out-coached by Oklahoma in that game. It's fair to say that. There's nothing wrong with that. Oklahoma had a damn good game plan in that game, and I thought it was a better game plan ultimately than Texas had. Texas still had a chance to win it late, which they should have. I think they actually were well-coached. Now they did lose their offensive coordinator, and they had to change coordinators, and they lost Dylan Gabriel, big part of why they beat Texas, and they lost all of their starting offensive line. You got a lot to replace. Like I said, I'm higher on Brent Venables. I'm a defensive guy, so I'm probably higher on him than a lot of us. And Elko, I like Elko too. They haven't had a chance to prove anything. I'd have thought, that he'd have got a chance, at least with Brent Venables, what he did last season. I'd have thought he'd have got a little bit more recognition, but he's got to prove it again in the SEC. CJ's back.
CJ's back and just in time to talk about one of his favorite subjects, the new college football game coming out here soon. And we saw some leaks today, then they were deleted, but we saw Quinn on the, what they called the standard cover. Curious y'all's thoughts on that, as I know y'all both counting down the days for this game.
Oh man, I can't wait to get back on that game, Rod. I know we've talked about it going a little head back and forth there, but I mean, this whole offseason for Texas has basically been just free PR, free media, free marketing, whatever it is. And this continues. You know how many copies of this game that they're going to sell, and they're going to have a Longhorn jersey and the burnt orange on the cover of that everywhere that this game goes? That's huge. That's huge for Texas. That's huge for Quinn Ewers. And you talk about the agenda, the kind of narratives that you need, the PR push to get into the Heisman race. Well, at the end of the day, this is certainly going to help. Say, hey, this is a third-year starting quarterback, first year in the SEC, coming back off of a playoff appearance as well. Oh, and he's on the cover of the biggest sports game in the world at the moment. So for Quinn Ewers, very cool. For Texas, this is huge. And for folks hoping that a Heisman returns to the 40 acres, this is big. This is really big.
Hey, CJ, I want to piggyback on what you said there because that is interesting. Are we talking about potentially for Texas – one of the best, if not the best, offseason that we've had for Texas football in forever? I mean, think about the combine. There was an argument to be made that Texas won the combine. Xavier Worthy, shattering the record for the 40-yard dash. You had, Byron Murphy and a lot of other showcase performances in the offseason. The NFL draft, you shattered your record. You had 11 guys drafted into the NFL draft. That was a big offseason, obviously, headline for Texas. And, you're talking about the video game now. Texas is going to have representation on the cover of the video game, the first one that's back since they canceled it and discontinued it years ago, and Texas will be represented on that game. It has been – the hits keep on coming. I can't remember an offseason actually recently. I could be prisoner of the moment here. Prior to social media, you wouldn't have had the buzz build like it is. So you got to be talking about post-social media age. But Texas had been able to have this kind of offseason. And Texas hadn't been good. and, you know, this good in the last 15 years consistently with this type of longevity that's expected. And, you know, you got the Arch Manning spring game performance that got everybody all hype about Arch Manning. So, you're right, CJ. I'm trying to remember an offseason where you had this much positivity, this much good mojo for the Longhorn football program.
Every box that they've had this offseason, the combine, the draft, the spring game, check, 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 Sark's on his media tour. You had one minor blip, but it ended up not even mattering. I mean, Tavondre Sweat went probably 30 picks higher than what most expected. So it's been a tremendous, tremendous offseason for the Longhorns from a PR's perspective. And, of course, you're still kind of being mocked or at least putting those way too early top fives. We just saw 10.5 from Vegas for the win total. It's a great offseason.
Really is, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, time to get your questions in, so please do so. We're going to get to many of those as we can. CJ, while we have you on here real quick, we know you're busy. Obviously, got a game about to go on behind you. But Daniel wants to know, Jonah Williams, still an OU lean?
That one might actually have teetered over to Texas A&M. I know OU felt very comfortable for about 2 or 3 months earlier this year. A&M's making a strong push. Right now, it's certainly between the two of them. Texas playing third fiddle there, maybe even a little bit lower on that leaderboard at the moment. But Oklahoma's losing a little bit of that grip right now for Jonah Williams. It looks like he might be staying a little bit closer to home instead of going up to Norman. Of course, an incredible baseball prospect as well. You're seeing it here. Two-sport guy, five-star caliber athlete without a question of a doubt. Of course, he is expected to play and wants to play safety at the next level. I'm sure some linebackers coaches kind of scoffing at that idea of a 6'3 guy that can run, super quickly. They'd love to have him in the middle of their box and on the defensive side of the ball. But, man, right now it's OU's to lose, and right now I think A&M's making a really, really strong push for him.
There you go. All right. And then our next question, guys, is actually for you again, CJ, from EQM. He says, does Texas eventually expand their recruiting footprint into the Carolinas and the Pacific Northwest? I'm curious to get both of y'all's thoughts on this.
That's good.
Yeah, we actually talked about it, Rod, in terms of the most fertile cities or, you know, metroplexes that produce NFL talent. And Baltimore is one of those spots where you see a lot of NFL talent, and you don't necessarily hear about it all too much. I know a lot of those guys end up going to Penn State, Maryland, of course, the Virginia Tech. They kind of knock out a couple as well. Hey, listen, I think Texas needs to, you know, kind of conquer Georgia a little bit first, retain their spots in Florida. I know that they've had success in Arizona and obviously California, but it's almost like for anybody that plays MLB The Show, it's, you know, when you play the Dynasty Conquest, you got to knock out step by step before you get the entire board. Right now, there are only a few schools in the entire country that can go anywhere in the country and recruit those big prospects. Right now, Texas trying to inch into Georgia territory. They're having some success there. If they can knock out the Southeast, then that's when you start heading north up the Atlantic. Right now, I think you start with Georgia, and then we'll see where that goes eventually down the road.
Yep, totally agree. I mean, at this point, if you just start looking at, you know, the most fertile pockets of talent around the country, I just don't know if it's worth it unless you just, you know, you got great coaching ties, which Texas does in the Pacific Northwest with PKM, and then, you know, you have kind of inroads to get a recruit, a high level recruit. I just don't know if it's worth it to go there because there's so many kind of pockets, concentrated pockets of talent that are here in Texas and then going east. As CJ said, even if you're going as far east as Baltimore, you know, the Baltimore metro area this year ended up being top five since 2020 in metro areas producing most NFL draftable prospects, NFL players who played their high school ball there. So if you want to talk about, you know, west really is LA and it's Arizona. LA and Arizona pretty much. California and Arizona are pretty much your spots out west. But, man, when you go east, starting with DFW, which is the second most fertile recruiting metro area in the country behind Atlanta, when you go DFW, then Houston, because Houston's also in the top five metro areas, then you go east, right? Then you're going to go to those pockets in Louisiana. Baton Rouge is in there. New Orleans is in there. And then you want to go Mississippi because Alabama's got to love them. And Sarkia, of course, he knows about Georgia, getting to the Atlanta metro area. And like you said, you can even keep on going. You want to go Charlotte? If you're talking about the Carolinas, Now, yes, that area there, Carolina's got a lot of talent. That Virginia area there, right up there, has a ton of talent too. So, yeah, I can see Sark starting here, getting majority market share in Houston and DFW, and doing what he's doing, just continuing out east. Even Sark has said they look at East Texas, Beast Texas, as just part of Louisiana. They just keep on going. They don't just look at that as one region of Texas. They just look at whole East Texas toward Louisiana area as just one big region they're recruiting, which is why you're getting more guys from Louisiana. So Sark's doing it right. I mean, that's in just terms of maximizing your time and maximizing your energy and your resources. Man, you got to stay here in Texas and you got to go east. Keep going east. You can go steal some guys from Cali in every now and then because of your connections there. But man, all the talent is east. The big humans on the D-line, they're east. They're in SEC territory.
Okay, Rob, before we move on, I'm going to let you tell folks out there about South Point Dodge.
Yeah, no doubt. Love to tell the folks about South Point Dodge. Really excited about them being a part of the Owen Texas football family. So fans, Longhorn fans out there, you can score an easy point this season when you get to the point at South Point Dodge. South Point Dodge has over 600 vehicles in stock and their award-winning sales staff. They don't play games, folks. They're not about gimmicks. They're just about getting straight to the point. And the point is they want to get you the best deal possible. So score big today at South Point Dodge. Go see them off I-35 in South Austin or go to southpointdodge.com. Get to the point today at South Point Dodge. And thank them for sponsoring the Wednesday night live stream for On Texas.
All right, we're going to move on here. And Cisco Diaz says, I think early on playing Georgia will give us a good idea of what we become, kind of like the Alabama game last season. Y'all's thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. I think Cisco might mean Michigan here because, you know, it kind of lines up with what we saw Alabama week two last year. But I 100% agree. It's a great early test against another defending champion, or at least in Alabama's case, a top three, top four team in the country. Of course, Michigan might be a little bit sneakily in favor of Texas. You know, you talk about everybody that they've lost with, 13 guys to the NFL, starting quarterback, starting running back, your entire offensive line, six offensive linemen depart as well. How much of this team is still the top team or top 10 team in the country? You no longer have Jim Harbaugh. You no longer have a defensive coordinator. That'll be interesting to me. But regardless, you're going to the big house. You're going to one of the best football environments in all of the sport, as well as a team that's going to be hungry to defend their title. So I think it absolutely is going to be a great test for the Longhorns. I do think Texas, what was it, Rod? They were favored by 3, I think, is what we talked about the other day. I certainly think Texas should come into that game favored. And if all goes well, Texas walks out with a victory. We've seen Quinn Ewers perform big in those big-time, prime-time games. This is another one for him to put a notch under his belt and say, yeah, this is going to be our year.
I agree. Yeah, it's going to be a great opportunity for Quinn. I say, you know, I always say put the cape on. They want to see Quinn put the cape on in these situations going up against Michigan. And, yes, Michigan has 3. I'm glad you said. And they got an NFL defensive coordinator, right? They brought in Wink Martindale, who loves to blitz. And one of the big issues with Quinn has been his pressure to sack rate. I've talked about this. 2 years ago, it was around 13% pressure to sack rate, which is that's right around average. That's really good. Last year, jumped to about 25%. NFL scouts want to see, all right, was 2 years ago an aberration, an outlier, or does he handle pressure well? How does he handle pressure? It's going to be a big year for that, and nobody's going to bring more pressure than Wink Martindale, especially having the best D-tackle room in the country. Yeah, now it's flipped. Michigan's got the best D-tackle room and D-tackle duo in all of college football, and they got the best cover corner in all of college football, arguably, too. So they're going to use that, man. So they're going to come after Quinn and blitz him. So I can't wait to see how Quinn handles that on the road, that kind of test. So that's going to be, I think, it's going to be a good test for Sark, too. And Sark will be ready for it, trust me. Sark will have the screen package going for that game, I guarantee you that, with the way Wink Martindale coaches. But also, I think, you know, that Georgia game, you're right in terms of the litmus test. I mean, that's Georgia may be the number one team in the country. At DKR, when was the last time Texas played the number one team in the country at DKR? Right, that will likely happen if I don't know. I don't see. I got to go look at Georgia's schedule, but I don't give a damn who Georgia's playing. I don't see Georgia losing before they play Texas. I got to go look at the schedule, but I'd pick Georgia in those games. They might be tested, but I'd pick Georgia. So Georgia will be not only a litmus test for the players this season, but I think it will be for Sark and where the program is, right? That's why that's a beautiful matchup, because where the he's four years in. Last year Texas got to the college football playoff, came up short. Sark talks about his obsession now with winning a national title. And so what did he go back to the drawing board and improve on, right? We know red zone offense was an issue. We know pass defense was an issue. Man, you're going up against Kirby Smart. That's one of the best defensive minds in college football history. And you don't think he's looking forward to the challenge of going up against Steve Sarkisian? Oh, he does. He's got special packages and exotic looks, simulated pressures, all creepers, all types of stuff ready to go in that game for Steve Sarkisian. I can promise you that. It's circled. And so I can't wait to see how in Sarkis, we know how he likes to dig into his bag of tricks when he has big games. Well, he's got a lot of big games this year. So I can't wait to see how he handles it, how Quinn puts the cape on. And that's what coaches and scouts in the NFL want to see. They want to see Quinn put this team on his back and go out there and look like he's a guy that's unstoppable. He can put the cape on. And we've seen it at times in big games, but they want to see it this year now at his team. And I think he's capable of it. I can't wait for the challenge because I think he's going to answer it. I think he'll be ready for it.
Rod, I love what you said there. Georgia, probably the litmus test for the program and its trajectory in total. Michigan's going to be that first test to give an idea of what we'll have on the field in 2024. So big program this year, Michigan, Georgia.
Yep, totally agree with that. And the one thing Sark was worried about too, right? Sark was asked by Josh Pate, what's your big concern, about the season? And he said those D tackles, right? Losing Byron Murphy, losing Tavondre Sweat. And we saw he brought in three D tackles via the transfer portal. Michigan's a good test for that early on because he's concerned. Essentially, the way to beat Sark and the way to beat Texas is ball control. The best defense against Sark is not to let him have the damn ball. And the way you do that is convert, just keep the football. Washington did it, right? Texas barely saw the ball in that third quarter. You had one turnover, boom, never saw the ball because Washington's like, no, we're going to convert and we're going to keep the ball. We're going to convert and keep the ball. And that's how you play Texas. You limit possessions for Sark. That's how you beat them. and you basically kind of slow the game down. And it's hard to do that against Sark because his team's going runs and usually get up in games and you're playing from behind and you're chasing and you have abandoned the running game. A hardball ball, which is bully ball, which they're still playing up there in Michigan. That's about controlling the clock, controlling the ball. Hell, there was some game. That was that half of football against, who was it? Was it against Penn State last year where J.J. McCarthy didn't even throw? Didn't have a pass attempt, right? That's hardball football. They're going to be still playing that brand of football. That is the brand of football that Sark's worried about. Power football. Teams just lining up and going, I ain't got to worry about your really good edge defenders if I'm just lining up, running the rock right at you. Power gap football. I ain't got to worry about how versatile and fast Anthony Hill is if I'm running right at the young buck. How you turn Michael Parsons into a mediocre defender? Run at him. That's what the Packers did. Run at him. All right? You can try to exploit what Texas thought. Even they have admitted is their biggest weakness on defense, running right at him. Now, like I said, you can try to throw at him too. We know that had worked as well. But the way to really, I think that Sark's worried about, he's worried about his interior defense line holding up against teams that want to run power at them, that want to play bully ball. And going into the SEC, more teams will be capable of that because they'll have bigger humans. They'll have better overall run games than they did in the Big 12. First test of that is Michigan. Because if Michigan can't keep up with you in the track meet, they don't have that. I think Texas has better skill position guys than Michigan. That's no question. But if Michigan, they can make that a moot point and they can mitigate any advantage Texas may have by simply running the rock right at them. Downhill, controlling the clock, converting, and making the game ugly. That's what Jim Harbaugh ball wants to do. Sark's worried about that. That's why he's gotten them D tackles. He's worried about that. He knows that's one of the recipes to beat them, and he doesn't want to have that be replicated in the SEC.
Well, going back to that Georgia game for a second, Daniel says, when was the last time we had QB1 versus QB2 in the next draft matchup in a regular season game?
That's good. Damn, that's good.
That's a great question.
That is a great question. I got to do some research on that. I'm sure it's
happening. Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams didn't play one another.
No.
Man, that's a really good question. I have to imagine it was, one of those seasons – Baker, Mahomes, were they the same draft? I know Mahomes went 10th, but No, I don't know. Tough when all those OU quarterbacks go first overall and how many of them end up going second or third. So that's kind of where my mind blinks a little bit. That's a good question. I'll have to research that one.
That's a good – I think you might have hit it, CJ. That was a good one about the Mahomes Baker Mayfield one. I didn't think about that. I'll look it up. I think you're right.
That game didn't disappoint. What it had, like 1,100 total yards between the two quarterbacks, 140 points or something like that. I mean, yeah. That's an all-time game that doesn't get the hype because Texas Tech, I think, ended up 5-7. So.
I will say that, I don't know. I don't know when we can go back. And I got to go do some research on that because right now it's a skate.
Joe Burrow, did he play Kyler? Or who did OU who did he beat that year against OU? 2019. Was that Jalen Hurts?
You might be right about that. That's a great question. I gotta do some research because that year you had 2019, Kyler Murray was number one
that year.
And then Daniel Jones was the second quarterback though taking that year.
Yeah, I know.
Daniel Jones went ahead of Josh Allen, remember? That's not a wise decision.
Ekem Burrow beat Trevor Lawrence.
Maybe that's it. You got to go back to those Deshaun Watson, Trevor Lawrence, Clemson teams.
Yeah. Good question.
Regular season. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, one other one that we have about the Georgia game, guys. Ski Breck says, does the Georgia game fall on a big recruiting weekend? Obviously, Formula One's going to be in town. It's going to be tough to get anywhere that weekend. Thanks, CJ.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough to get in and out of the city that week. With that being said, I don't think Texas is going to pass up the opportunity to host 25, 26, and 27 recruits at home for that game. It was a big recruiting weekend that week against Alabama in 2022. It's going to be just as big against Georgia this year. Of course, when else would it be? You know, you're probably going to have a big game or a big recruiting weekend week one, perhaps, and then I don't think Mississippi State's going to get those big recruiting battles, those kids to get on the flight and get out to Austin like a game against Georgia will when you're probably expecting a top three, top four, top five matchup at the very worst between Texas and Georgia. That game, Texas probably rented out its own hotel already because, like you mentioned, F1 weekend, they're going to have – it's going to be tough to find some beds that night. That'll be the fact of the matter in Austin.
All right, y'all. Well, we got time for a few more questions. Rod, I know you and CJ both got to get out of here a little bit early, but before we get to those last few questions, guys, I need to take this opportunity to tell y'all about My Perfect Franchise. Are you stuck in the corporate rat race with 2 weeks PTO and no control over the money you can make or your schedule in general? Then call Andy. He's going to take you through a process that'll help you find a business that'll fit your skill sets and fit your financial goals. Franchise ownership isn't for everyone, but if you have a desire to take control of your destiny, call Andy or email him today at andy@myperfectfranchise.net. And we want to thank him for sponsoring tonight's show. Like I said, time for just a couple more questions here. This one actually more of a comment, and it garnered some attention in the chat earlier when we were on a different subject. So I want to get y'all's thoughts on it. John Haney says the top opponents on Texas' schedule all have major questions at offensive line.
I would say yes, except for maybe Georgia. I think Georgia's going to be just fine. Michigan, maybe not a strength or maybe not a weakness of their team, but certainly I would put a question mark on it. You lose six of your best offensive linemen from a year ago. We talk about hardball football and kind of how that team likes to play ball. Hard to do that when you have to replace every single starter. You know, that's just kind of the fact of the matter. We'll see there. A&M, offensive line is a big question. Arkansas, offensive line probably non-existent. Oklahoma had to replace all five starters. Your best one just transferred to Missouri. So I think that comment has some substance. Texas, again, we've seen the rankings. We've seen the conversation. Texas having the second best offensive line in the SEC behind LSU. Listen, it helps when you return guys. It helps when you have veterans at the center spot, your left tackle, and your guards. We'll see what Cam Williams turned into, but I believe he's a guy who could certainly be drafted day two, but when it's all said and done for him, 6'6", 6'5", 360 pounds, moves very well. We'll see. But, man, I Texas has the edge there, that's for sure.
Rod? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with him. I think Texas right now, hell, Georgia may be one of the only O-lines that's better than Texas, I believe, when there was a ranking recently at Texas as I think it was the second best O-line in the country behind Georgia, recent ranking over at On3, if I'm not mistaken. I could be mistaken about that, but I think they were around that high in terms of the ranking. They'll be considered a top five O-line. They should be with all the talent they've been recruiting. Yeah, I think Texas will have the O-line advantage in most games they play, maybe not the Georgia game and maybe not that Michigan game, because I just don't know exactly what Jim Harbaugh's been stockpiling there, because I'm sure he's been recruiting like gangbusters. But, yeah, I think Texas should be a strength for Texas this year. And with all the returning production that Texas has, you know, they lost a lot of skill guys, but the guts really the core of this this team really is going to be the offensive line and Quinn. Not a lot of teams returned most of their O-line and their starting quarterback too. And somebody's telling, I got a text from somebody real time that said it had to be Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. Because they played in, was it national title game? Yeah.
That was the Rose Bowl game, right?
Yeah. So yes, it was a semifinal, right? And they played in the semifinal in 2014. That might have been it, because remember, then they go in the draft. Both of those guys were 1-2.
Yeah, Mariota ended up winning that game. That's when you had the famous Jameis slip, and the ball, you know, goes back about 20 yards, and Oregon scoops it for a touchdown. One of my favorite plays of all time. But yeah, that's probably it, Rod.
Okay. Yeah, but I don't know. I haven't done research, but somebody texted me and said that might have been it. So just sake of the conversation.
All right, y'all, just a couple more questions here. James Henson says, I was wondering what y'all thought about the 2026 wide receiver / tight end, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Pro Throw. And then he says, hook him.
Yeah, Texas just offered him today. That was Chris Jackson out there in Georgia today, 6'6". Kind of a flex, very versatile guy, plays back basketball as well. Listen, it's going to be tough to pull those five-star kids from Georgia. It always is. But if Texas does have an opportunity to pull kids from Georgia, it's when they beat Georgia on the football field, and they have that opportunity this year. Of course, the offer coming today, he already has about 25 offers under his belt. So it's not like Texas is in super early, making a super early impression here. But if Texas is able to get him on campus, that's a kid that I'm sure Georgia would love to land. You don't see five-star tight ends all too often, and the ones that you do, you certainly don't let them want to slip away from your home on your back porch. So that'll be interesting. Of course, all depends on if Texas is able to get him on the campus. 6'6", tight end, wide receiver flex, basketball background out of Georgia. Chris Jackson offered today.
All right, guys. And then our next question here from Zach Ramsey. I haven't heard much about Ryan Niblett. Do you think he'll be a kick return?
Wow. I don't know, because you got Matthew Golden is going to be your kickoff returner, and then I hear Silas Bolden is going to be at least one of the guys they consider for punt return, and I don't know, CJ. I don't know if that's the case, really.
Yeah, I think Silas Bolden is absolutely going to be your punt return guy. I have that on pretty good authority. And, of course, I think Matthew Golden, with what he did last year at Houston, I mean, why would you not have a guy who scores 22-23% of all of the kickoff returns that he attempts? I mean, that's a pretty good mark. You don't see that all too often. Really talented guy, great vision, great change of direction, and, of course, the acceleration to score. It's going to be tough to get either one of them out of that position, especially for someone who's not yet had that experience at the college level.
And our final question tonight, guys, from Chris Bennett. Is the Georgia game the biggest game in DKR history?
Oh, I mean, if they're – like I said, they could be number one, right? They're number one. How often has Texas hosted a number one overall, like, your team, period, that's ranked number one? I'm sure it's happened like a couple of times, but it ain't happened a lot. So, as Daniel mentioned here, when was the last time we had QB1 versus QB2 in the next draft matchup in a regular season game? And he's actually right. That matchup that I brought up, Marcus Mariota and James Winston, wasn't regular season. That was in the bowl game. So CB saying Ohio State 06.
I was thinking that too.
Okay. See, there you go. That's the last time then. It don't happen very often. So it could be, because this team, like I said, you got, I don't know. You got, I think you got more talented than Ohio State team, but I got to go check. I don't know. about that. Texas and expectations are big for Texas. They were big back then too. No six.
Yep, they sure will be.
Yeah,
that'll be a great game. I'm sure. You know, it's hard to look at that game and say, man, time to get up for it, because I mean, it's going to be a top five matchup. But my goodness, you know, all the implications, Georgia. You know, looking to get back into the college football playoff. Obviously, they missed it a year ago. Texas looking to make a big impression early on in their SEC tenure. The storylines are going to run rampant. We just talked about one versus two quarterbacks, whatever ranking, whatever order you might have them in. But those are the two guys, I would say, without a doubt, entering the season as the two top quarterbacks in the country.
Was Bama number one in 2022?
Five.
They were five. Okay.
Number five. And I think LSU was what? Number four?
Yeah.
2019?
Okay. Yeah.
A couple of people saying Arkansas in the 60s. Obviously, that was a little bit before our time. So hard to make a call on that one.
Yeah. But it doesn't happen all the time. So it's going to be a pretty damn big game. You're right about that, CB. No doubt.
Okay, guys, well, that's going to do it for tonight's edition of the On Texas Football Longhorn live stream. We want to thank Andy Ludeke and My Perfect Print franchise, along with South Point Dodge. Be sure to head on over to ontexasfootball.com for continuous coverage. Of course, Bobby and Jerry will be back tomorrow morning for coffee and football, that beginning about 8:10 a.m. And I guess for CJ Bogle and Rod Babers, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you next time.
Welcome.
See y'all tomorrow for the winning drive.
Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you need to summarize your class notes or want to create a recipe with the ingredients you already have in your fridge, Meta AI has the answers. You can also research topics, explore interests, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.